Full Story is supported by AMP Super. There are moments in life where everything shifts. A new job, a new home, a new direction. But those same moments can also shape your future. AMP calls these super moments. Times to check in on your super. And with 24/7 digital financial advice, AMP Super helps you make more confident decisions as your situation changes. Search AMP Super Moments to find out more. AMP Super. Built for life's super moments. AMP Super, issued by NM Superannuation Proprietary Limited. See PDS and TMD on amp.com.au and consider what's right for you.
Sarah, thanks so much for coming into the Full Story studio.
Thank you for having me.
So your dad is part of what's known as the NZYQ cohort and could soon be deported to Nauru. Why have you chosen to do this interview? Why are you speaking about your family story?
I'm speaking today because I don't think there is a lot of awareness as to what's going on. People like my dad and people in his cohort are essentially being snatched from their homes and in a really traumatizing manner, to say the least. And I'm doing this to bring awareness to this cause, to my dad's cause, and to help him as much as I can, because I love him.
And I understand he was granted a permanent protection visa back in the early 2000s. It was later cancelled. What happened?
Look, I was really young back then, but what I do know is my dad has had a really bad run of it. Back when I was little, I know that he was working in a factory and he like dislocated quite a few discs in his spine and caused him to have a lot of trouble walking and doing that kind of work. And at the same time, he's trying to get a citizenship as well. And on top of that, his mother was dying overseas. So he was trying to do all of these things and he unfortunately fell into drug dependency, as you can imagine. All of that, just one person, is quite a lot, especially with, you know, me probably being like a little baby at that point and my mum also having her own issues as well. So he fell into drug dependencies and, yeah, I know that he committed a few offences but has since served his time.
Mm. When was he last in prison?
I'm pretty sure when I was 16 or 17. That's when he had finished serving his time, but he didn't immediately come out. He was sent to the detention centre.
Okay, so he has spent time in immigration detention.
Mm-hmm.
In late 2023, the High Court handed down a landmark judgment which found that it was unconstitutional for non-citizens like your dad to be held indefinitely in immigration detention. And at the time, he was in immigration detention because he had lost his visa. Could you take me back to that day when you learnt that your father would be coming home, would be leaving immigration detention?
Yeah, I remember that day quite vividly, to be honest. It's a core memory of mine. So I was shopping with a friend. It was like a late night shopping day or whatever. And we were in JB Hi-Fi and, I get this call from my dad very late and I'm just like, oh, like, does he need something? I'm not too sure. So I answer it and, he basically says, Bubba, like, I need you to come pick me up. And as you can imagine, I'm very, very confused. I have no idea what's going on. My face was just in shock and my friend is just kind of confused as to why I'm in shock. And I was just like, what's happening? Like, what's going on? I just started asking a billion questions. He's like, I'll tell you everything, but just come and get me. And I had to apologize to my friend. I'm like, I'm sorry. Like, I need to go now. And she was, she thankfully lived very close to the shopping center and didn't mind me ditching her. She was just like, go get your dad. And, I drove down there and it was the first time that I actually saw him outside of, you know, whatever detention or incarceration. Since I was, you know, very, very little. And it was very surreal. It was so surreal. It was just seeing him there with like a trolley full of his stuff. And I was just in shock. And then he was just like, let's go. Like, let's go. And yeah, we drove home. He wanted to surprise my mum. As you could imagine, it was a lot of like hugs and kisses and kind of just like an oh my God moment. And I ended up getting KFC that night with my parents because KFC is like my dad's favorite meal ever. And yeah, like I will remember that night. It was such a good night. It kind of felt like our family had started to heal again.
So he was out for around 2 years. Mm-hmm. Then in December of last year, after the government signed a transfer deal with Nauru, your dad was taken back into immigration detention where he remains. Can you tell me about that day, the day that Australian Border Force came looking for him?
Yeah. I think it's so contrasting because the day that he was released from detention is such a core memory, but the day that he was re-detained is even more so. I think just from, you know, the experience and the trauma of it all. I was going into the office one day and I received a call from my mum saying that, you know, immigration are here and my dad was not home at that time. He was out. I can't remember if it was for an appointment or seeing a friend. But I drove down there as soon as I could just because my mum was in no state to deal with them. She was kind of in her room crying, thinking that he's going to be taken again. And so when I got down there, I had found that there were 7 armed Australian Border Force officers wanting to get my dad to sign something. And I'm thinking to myself, like, why do you need 7 people for that, you know? It's a bit ridiculous. And why couldn't have this been an email if you needed to sign something? So it was kind of quite obvious that they were not there to actually get him to sign something. They were there to take him away. They came twice just because my dad was unfortunately not home. And once we got a hold of him, he was like, look, I'll just come tomorrow. Give me their address. And so I relayed that to the officers and they gave me the office to go to. And yeah, even though they were nice enough, I just knew that they were obviously there to take my dad away. And I think another thing to note is the humiliation aspect of it all. Like, my mum and my dad live on a main road with 7 officers in our front yard, essentially waiting to take my dad away. It was really hard to deal with that on my own. And it was a really traumatizing experience. Yeah, I honestly think about that still to this day, and it's sometimes really hard to get to sleep because of it.
What happened next?
Later on, they left and my dad came home. We knew what would happen. We knew that he was going into immigration once we took him into that office and that he wouldn't be coming out. So he packed a bag already prepared, which, you know, much to his merit, he was just trying to abide the law and do the right thing. So yeah, he packed a bag. We had dinner that night as a family, and then the next morning I came back and I had to do the hardest thing that I ever had to do in my life, which was take my dad to the office. There was this huge line of people kind of waiting, and then as soon as we got there and told, you know, whoever the security guard was, our names and what we were there for, it was kind of just like, hold on a minute, you stay right there, don't move. And we skipped this huge line of people, and my dad made this comment to me of like, look, they've caught the bad guy, they're happy about it almost. And it was just so ridiculous to me in that moment that this is happening. It felt so unjust. And so we went up the elevator and we sat down and I stayed with him as much as I could. They wanted to do an interview with him and they were essentially asking him about his BVR visa, understanding that once he signs this piece of paper, that right is taken away and that they've issued a Nauruan visa for him without his consent. And then my dad essentially went on to kind of speak his story to them. And then we were just kind of left there to wait And I was trying to organise, you know, his medical because he has diabetes and at this point a numb foot as well. And I was like, he needs to be seen by a doctor. He has to take, you know, certain tablets every single day. And there just wasn't much care or empathy in any of the people that we talked to that day. And then essentially it was time for him to go. I gave him a hug and I left that room and I went down that elevator and I just started bawling my eyes out in my car. And I still regret that. Sorry.
Why?
Because it's like, could you imagine having to drive your family member, someone that you love and care for, to a place where you know they're never going to leave again? And so, yeah, that was like one of the hardest days of my life, for sure.
You mentioned there that your dad has been issued with a Nauruan visa. That means he could potentially be deported very soon. How would that affect you and your family if he is permanently sent to Nauru?
It would affect our family extremely. You know, it's so hard, from what I've been told, to get a Nauruan visa. But on top of that, you're sending this person who is effectively an Australian citizen just without the paperwork to a place that he does not know, that he has no ties to, without his family. My mum will never be able to get on a plane. She has so many, you know, physical and mental health issues. She would never be able to see him again. And I know it's extremely hard for visitors to even be able to get an Nauruan visa. So I won't even be sure if I could see him again. But that isn't even the point of it all. It's like you're separating a family. This deal is effectively separating families from each other. Like, we're all he knows. We're his family here. He has a community here. He, you know, he's lived here more than half his life. And he's, what, going to be deported to a place that is so small, that is without support, without the medical attention that he needs, to potentially never see his friends or family again. And it feels so insane that this is happening to people and people like me, that even though, you know, in the media that they portray these people as strangers and foreigners who they just want to get rid of because they're causing, well, for whatever reason, they just want to get rid of them. But they don't understand that, yeah, you're trying to get rid of this one person, but you're affecting a whole community around them. You're affecting me. You're affecting my mom, our future lives together. I know her mental health would be going downhill. And I fear for her life. I fear that she might even try and commit suicide because of it, you know. She's experienced a lot of trauma in her life with her own father. And so, and my dad has been a lifeline to her. And cutting that would be insane to me. And then on top of that, it's effectively condemning us and punishing us for something that he's already served his time for. You know, I carry a lot of weight. I'm an only child. I take care of my mom and my parents when I can. Having my dad around has helped a lot. But without him, like, this load is, it's too much for one person to bear.
You described your dad as effectively an Australian citizen without the paperwork. What did you mean?
Yeah, I mean, he's lived here more than half his life, you know. He has a community, he has family, he has no other ties to any other countries. He's been here. If this was anyone else that has that paperwork, they'd be moving on with their lives by now. So it feels so unfair that he's being singled out for something he's already served his time for, has already been punished for and punished again. You know, being sent to detention unlawfully, as the High Court had proved. in 2023. And now he's being re-detained again. So punished again. He just wants to move on with his life. Like, he just wants to spend time with his family, you know, go on walks, see sites in Australia, be free to live his life and move on. He's done the work. He's, you know, improved on his life. He's gotten himself together. And so I think even without this paperwork, he is effectively Australian. He lives those values. He's done the work. And so I just don't see why he's being punished again.
Mm. You mentioned media coverage.
Mm.
The NZYQ cohort, which includes more than 300 people, includes some people who have been convicted of serious offences, including murder and other sexual offences. What would you say to people who have seen the headlines about this group and who have little sympathy for people like you and your family?
I would say that this group is being lumped into one person. This group is a variety of people with a variety of offences. Personally, my dad has not committed anything of what you just said. And if this was anyone else in Australia that has that paperwork, they would be able to move on with their lives.
We'll be right back.